And now, it's time for the PewterPlank pregame show on the PewterPlank.com and PewterPlank Radio Network.
All right, and welcome in to the PewterPlank pregame show here on the PewterPlank.com. Tampa Bay taking on the Atlanta Falcons today. We're going to have a little bit of preview for that. Looking forward to a game that will no doubt be interesting to both watch and basically, well, watch and unfold basically are the same thing. But you kind of know what I mean. Because there's going to be a couple different ways that Bucks fans are looking at this game today. You're going to have, obviously, the overarching thing that you're watching being, are the Buccaneers going to win? Are they going to get to 7-4 on the season and pretty much put their name in the hat for winning the NFC South, which could be very interesting to see. This team is starting to very slowly win me over as a playoff-worthy team, but I have a very strong suspicion that that is just Kool-Aid being slowly injected into my veins, you know, train spotting style, you know. I've kicked the junk. I'm off of it after that Bulls season in 2011, but I'm coming right back to it because it's really hard to break away from because it's such a good feeling to just blindly indulge in the high times of a football team that is nowhere near being developed enough to make a playoff run, or at least a serious run within the playoffs themselves. As it stands right now, though, the Buccaneers are still a team that is on the outside looking in, so for the pessimists out there, such as myself, the cynics, you know, things aren't going to go the way that other people think it's going to go. This team is eventually going to lose. They're eventually going to lose badly because of that secondary that they have. And this Sunday very well could be that game. Today, that could happen. I called it happening 2 weeks ago against the San Diego Chargers, and much to my surprise, the secondary didn't implode. It almost happened the week before that in Oakland. So it's really kind of a ticking time bomb type situation. So we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. And also we're going to have our Pewter Plank predictions, how we think this game is going to go today. Again, pretty much be able to get that, or you're pretty much going to be able to get that throughout the show, how I feel about that. But we'll get to it eventually for, let's say, official sake. But obviously, what you're going to want to talk about coming into this game, we're going to talk about some five key matchups to watch, basically five keys to victory for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the first of which being Doug Martin needs to be involved in the offense. That goes without saying, okay? Every week, Doug Martin needs to be involved in this offense. He's the best weapon right now on that unit. He's has the most explosiveness. And I am taking into account the wide receiving situation. But here's the thing with that. And there's a lot of Josh Freeman haters out there. And they might get tickled by this little analysis. But Doug Martin's running ability is in no way affected by Josh Freeman. Now, don't confuse that with Doug Martin's capability of running the ball. Okay, his ability to run the football is, it has absolutely nothing to do with Josh Freeman. Unless Josh Freeman is throwing him the football and it's a passing play, Josh Freeman has nothing to do with that. Once the ball gets to Doug Martin, and it's pretty much 99.9% certain that when the quarterback snaps the ball, he's going to get it to the running back. There are those anomalies that the defensive line rushes through and is able to get to the quarterback first, or they're able to swat the ball away. But we really don't see that happening. And then, of course, there is the fraction of times where you have a botched handoff. But we haven't really seen Josh Freeman do too many of those. So, with pretty much a guaranteed certainty, when Josh Freeman is handing the ball off to Doug Martin, that's it. Josh Freeman stops being a factor in that play. You could argue that after Josh Freeman gets a receiver a ball, he stops being a factor. But he's more of a tool in getting that type of play done, because it needs to go from Josh Freeman perfectly to a receiver. So Josh Freeman is very active in that equation. When it comes to Doug Martin, get him the ball, And his ability speaks for itself. Don't confuse that with capability, though, because that's where the offensive line comes into play. And, of course, Josh Freeman comes back into play as well, because if the passing game isn't doing much, of course that's going to make the Buccaneers one-dimensional. But then you have to juxtapose it against the ability, and now you're seeing why Doug Freeman needs to be incorporated into this offense a lot more. Just because the Buccaneers are going to run the ball, and because defenses know they're going to run the ball, doesn't mean Doug Martin's going to be stopped. Even his bad games, he really hasn't put up stats that have been really stomach-churning worthy. Okay? Even his bad games, he hasn't really had a bad game per se this year. You know, you take a look at Chris Johnson over in Tennessee, who has got this perception of being this powerful, very fast, effective runner. And he has games where he has about 10 yards. Doug Freeman has not had that kind of a game yet. I mean, he will eventually. Everybody has those games. Nobody's immune to those kinds of games. But as of right now, he's running pretty hot. And I don't think he's in a spot right now where defenses have necessarily figured out how he runs. But, you know, then again, they could. But I'm going with history here. It usually takes a year for a defense to figure out a player. And we usually talk about backup quarterbacks or running quarterbacks, scrambling quarterbacks. You know, Mike Vick was very good at kind of fooling defenses in this way, kind of changing the way they game plan. Josh Freeman creeping right back into Doug Freeman's, or Doug Freeman, did that again, Doug Martin. It's like, what are you talking about? Doug Martin. Doug Martin's not necessarily changing the way running backs run the football, but it's going to take a little while for defenses to maybe figure them out. Atlanta's defense, you know, not necessarily something that I would write home about, and I'm not just saying that because I'm naturally biased against the Atlanta Falcons, but, you know, there's weaknesses on this defense, and we saw it last week, we saw it time and time again. And if Doug Martin can exploit some of these weaknesses on this Atlanta defense, this is going to open up the offense, pretty much. Not to say that the offense runs through Doug Martin, but he's a very integral part. And if you put him in a situation where he can give Josh Freeman some time to throw the ball, then all of a sudden you're looking at something else. So Doug Martin definitely needs to be a big part of the game plan today. Another key to victory, Josh Freeman needs to keep it cool. I say this every week and I will say it until Josh Freeman retires or until he consistently keeps his cool. He's doing a nice job recently. Had some interceptions last week, broke the streak. He had gone since the Chiefs game all the way up until last week without throwing an interception. Then he throws a pair. Not a great game for Josh Freeman, but he kept his cool. All right, he was a smooth operator down the stretch there in that fourth quarter. We've all watched it again and again and again. And I know you have, too. Don't even try to pretend you haven't found a GIF or that video somewhere of him throwing that beautiful pass to Vincent Jackson in the end zone with time running out against the Panthers last week. We've all seen it. That's Josh Freeman keeping his cool. We saw it in 2010, it disappeared in 2011, and now in 2012 we're starting to see flashes of Josh Freeman, you know, with the cool hand again. That needs to continue. I'm not expecting Josh Freeman to constantly be cool under pressure, because he's not there yet. Frankly, he took some steps back last year, and we have to deal with that. And actually, fans, as I am seeing as the season progresses, they're growing with that, okay? They're okay with Josh Freeman taking some setbacks. Obviously, when they happen, you guys turn pretty venomous against them. But, you know, there is an understanding that Josh Freeman does need to take some time to get back into that type of cool, smooth operator type of groove that he can get in. And when he gets in it, we see what happens. Everybody was calling it last Sunday, you know, the comeback king. Talking about all those comebacks in 2010, can he do it again? And he did it again because he was cool under pressure. He's not always going to be cool under pressure. Even when he's consistently cool, there may be some times where he will lose his cool under pressure. Not necessarily lose it, you know, like a loose cannon, but, you know, it'll get shaky. But last week we saw a flash of what a cool under pressure Josh Freeman can do. It really was nothing new. It was more of, you know, getting back to where it was. And now we want to see it continue. Against a defense that isn't necessarily as stout as it could be, Josh Freeman, if he can keep his cool, I think the Buccaneers can stay in this football game. We saw it last year when he didn't have his cool. You know, it was kind of the same defense that we're looking at. It was kind of the same Falcons team, actually, that we're looking at. I mean, they're obviously they've grown. They're 9-1. So, you know, the comparisons aren't exact. But we were kind of looking at the same Falcons team that we were looking at last year that we're looking at now for today. The defense is good, but it's not great. The offense is outstanding, but it's vulnerable. Matt Ryan last week, 4 interceptions against the Arizona Cardinals. Granted, the Cardinals do have some pretty good defensive backs. They got some cornerbacks down there in Arizona. But 4 interceptions off of Matty Ice, that's pretty impressive, considering how low the Cardinals have sunk since starting out 4-0 or whatever they started out as, and they've just fallen off the map. You know, that's pretty impressive. And then, you know, so if Josh Freeman can just stay cool under pressure, this defense for the Buccaneers might be able to hold down Matt Ryan, but as it always is, it begins and ends with Josh Freeman. If Josh Freeman can be cool, if he can stay out there, keep the offense on the field, give the defense a rest, then we're not going to see it snowball into the defense getting tired in the second half, and then we have the drive like we had at the end of the Redskins game where everybody's just kind of running around the field, hands on their hips, and it's just a mess, and then the Buccaneers lose, a game that they very much should have had wrapped up. So Josh Freeman, cool under pressure, another key to victory. Key to victory number 3, as we were just talking about, the defense. Not the secondary. I don't want to talk about the secondary right now. I'm just talking about the defense in general. Okay? Matty Ice last week, 4 interceptions against the Arizona Cardinals. But if you're just looking at that game, there's plenty of disanalogies that you can go back and look at and group in to say that this offense is indeed outstanding at times, but very vulnerable at others. Okay? And the list goes on and on and on and on. And it's not just the offense. It's the team as a whole. Okay, the game against Carolina, they almost lost. Obviously, they lose against the New Orleans Saints, exposing some weaknesses there. They almost lose against the Arizona Cardinals. The Oakland Raiders took them to the wire. Granted, the Bucs got taken to the wire by the Raiders, too. But maybe to some fanatical fan out there, that'll align the stars to say that the Buccaneers are as good as the Falcons, which they're not. But just some examples of what has happened to the Falcons this season. Okay, they're not a lights-out football team. They are not blowing people away. They are not, you know, shutting teams down. They've had, you know, if you go back and look at their schedule, they've pretty much only had 3 games that they've, you know, 3 or 4 games that they've pretty much dominated the whole way through. Okay, you've got Kansas City in week 1, they beat them 40-24. San Diego in week 3, they beat them 27-3. And then you could say that you have to say that the Eagles game was pretty easy for the Falcons. They win that one 30-17. But other than that, that's 3 games that the Falcons have pretty much dominated their opponent the entire game. Week 2 against Denver, 27-21. That's like the 4th game, I guess you could say, to group into here to say that the Falcons dominated, because the Broncos made it look a lot closer than it actually was. But the Panthers in week 4, 30-28. Washington, 24-17. Oakland, 23-20. Dallas, 19-13. Arizona last week, 23-19. And then that one loss, of course, to the Saints, 31-27. Those are not large margins of victory for the Atlanta Falcons. Now, I'm not saying that the Buccaneers are going to come in and they're going to climb all over them and they're going to get out to a big lead and it's going to be the Falcons fighting from behind. I don't think that'll happen. It could. It kind of happened against the Saints. You know, kind of jumping out. And then you allow them back into the game for the Buccaneers. I want it to happen against the Falcons because I think the Buccaneers have maybe corrected some things from when they lost that lead against the Saints. But in the grand scheme of things, in the marathon of the game, not the sprint of the quarters, these are not large margins of victory for the Atlanta Falcons. Okay? So there are people that are just predicting the Falcons to run all over the Buccaneers, but there are some more sensible people that are saying this is going to be a good matchup, and I think that that is why we're looking at a good matchup this week. You can, I mean, the secondary for the Buccaneers is in a league of its own, and it's not a very good league, all right? But this defense, looking at these margins of victory, all you have to do is go out there and maintain. You don't have to hold the Falcons down. You don't have to get four interceptions against Matt Ryan. Ask the Cardinals. You get four interceptions against him, he still finds a way to beat you. All right? Just maintain. Because if the defense can go out there and, I mean, look at Carolina in week four. They allow 30 points to the Falcons. And they only lose by 2 points. This Buccaneers defense goes out there and allows 30 points to the Falcons, and the offense is only 2 points behind. I think we saw last week in week one and these past couple weeks, this Buccaneers offense is a lot better than the Panthers offense. Even when the Panthers offense is on, they don't have the weapons that this Buccaneers offense does. They don't have the swagger that this Buccaneers offense does. They don't have the talent that this Buccaneers offense does or possesses. You put this offense in a 30-28 game against the Atlanta Falcons, a divisional game, a rivalry game, a game that actually has a lot on the line in not only the NFC South race, but a playoff race that the Buccaneers are in. You put that offense in there, that Josh Freeman in the last 2 minutes of that Panthers game last week, you better watch out, okay? And that's not me sipping the Kool-Aid, that's me just stating a fact. Okay, this offense, when it is on, you better put up or shut up. You either try to stop it or you just get out of the way. All right? So, really all the defense has to do is maintain. And that's why that's a key to victory. Maintain Michael Turner. Maintain Jacquizz Rodgers. Get pressure on Matt Ryan. We saw it last year. You remember that game in Tampa where the Buccaneers beat the Falcons? What did they do? They got to Matt Ryan. They roughed him up a little bit. Let them know that they were there, and all of a sudden, you know, Roddy White and Julio Jones, they go over 100 yards each, but that's it. Nothing much more to that. And you better guarantee that if Julio Jones plays, he and Roddy White both going over 100 yards this week. I mean, you could pretty much book it with this secondary. They might even push 200. All right, maybe that was preposterous to say. But you know what I'm saying here. All the defense needs to do is maintain. Hold down Michael Turner. Get pressure on Matt Ryan. Force him to make some throws that maybe are some, you know, a little bit suspect. You know, he's human. We saw last week. Granted, the Cardinals' secondary is a lot better than this Bucs' secondary. It's not impossible to have Matt Ryan throw interceptions. Okay? He's not an MVP caliber quarterback in that sense. All right? He's not untouchable. Maintain. Get yourself in a 30-28 game, and this offense is fired up like we saw last week. All of a sudden, we've got ourselves a brand new ball game. Key to victory, numero four. This is, you know, I'm holding off the secondary until number five. We all know what that's going to be. So number four is the coaching. All right? I honestly see a lot of similarities between Greg Schiano and Mike Smith in the way that they run their football teams. They are not out there guys. They are not guys that are usually outspoken. They're not guys that are usually known for their schemes necessarily. They just kind of get the job done. And Mike Smith gets the job done very, very, very well and very efficiently. Greg Schiano is the same way in that they're motivators. Okay, they know how to get their team motivated. They know how to get their team prepared for that next week, and they know how to execute. The only difference is that Mike Smith's been doing a little bit longer than Greg Schiano has, and Greg Schiano likes to get a little cute with the things that he does. All right? We all know about that play in week two that I'm sick and tired of talking about. We all know about the moving on the line against the Saints. We all know about the way that Greg Schiano likes to throw some things in there that maybe necessarily aren't kosher with the way that coaches like to coach. Mike Smith is kind of the same way. And not that he throws in these tricky little, you know, things that maybe people aren't expecting and rubs people the wrong way, but he's a passionate guy. And I'm looking directly back at a game with the Falcons and the Redskins where D'Angelo Hall is getting into it with one of the Falcons players on the sideline, and Mike Smith comes up, and boom, he is in that. He has given it to D'Angelo Hall. He's given it to the Redskins. He's given it to his players. He's taken control of the situation. He got blasted for that. Mike Smith got knocked for that, for getting into D'Angelo Smith's face, for pretty much what people were interpreting as lowering himself to the standards of the players. Or lowering himself to the standard of D'Angelo Hall, whatever. Point being, the same way that Greg Schiano likes to get in there and likes to try things that are different, that rub people the wrong way, Mike Smith is another guy who really doesn't care what you think about him. Okay, he can take your Coach of the Year award, that's great and everything, but he's about the Falcons, he is about winning with the Falcons, and he is about not caring what anybody else thinks. Even if you're an opposing player on his sideline talking trash because maybe, you know, you're a little bit of a hothead. Mike Smith, not afraid to get into his face. Greg Schiano, not afraid to try unconventional things to win. These two coaches are a lot more similar than people think. And as we move into the future, and as the Buccaneers get better, and as the Falcons get better, and this rivalry begins to become hold a lot more weight, we're going to begin to see comparisons between the two. Oh, a nice way that Greg Schiano can arrive on the scene here is to outcoach Mike Smith. And Mike Smith isn't a master schemester. He's not a guy, he's not a Belichick where he's going to come out with these crazy plays or anything like that. He's human. We remember that 4th-and-1 play that he went for last year. I believe it was against the Panthers, and it didn't work. And I believe they ended up losing that football game because of that. He's human. He tries everything. But 9 times out of 10, Mike Smith's firing on the right cylinder. And Greg Schiano is very much the same way in that respect. So a nice way that Greg Schiano can arrive into this rivalry is to outcoach Mike Smith in the first game. Which might not be saying a whole lot, because people might point to Raheem Morris beating Mike Smith, but there's a difference between your team beating Mike Smith's team and you out-coaching Mike Smith. And I think with Schiano, the Buccaneers finally have a guy where they can say, our coach out-coached that coach. He didn't just happen to beat him with the players that he has on his roster. So that's a key to victory. Coaching. Greg Schiano needs to be careful with what he does. But again, maybe some of this unconventional stuff might work against Mike Smith. Obviously, key to victory number 5 is the secondary. This defensive secondary for the Buccaneers needs to not be so vomitrocious. It just needs to stop being so stomach-churningly horrible that, you know, this secondary is going to cost the Buccaneers a game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. This secondary is going to cost this football team a game, and I think it's going to be today. This Falcons team, they are 9-1. Yes, we pointed out that they've been in these, you know, 30-28, 24-17, 23-20 games. They don't mess around. And we're getting to the point in the season where teams that don't mess around, don't mess around. Okay, Atlanta, they're seeing a little bit of breathing room, a little bit of distance between themselves and the Chicago Bears, because the Bears dropped their last 2 games. Now the Bears are at 3 losses. The Falcons are at 9-1. 9-1, 7-3. We've got some distance. The Falcons, they want to close this out. They want home field advantage. They want that number one seed. They want the road to the Super Bowl in the NFC to go through Atlanta. Now, in order to do that, you got to win games. And in order to win games, you have to not mess around. I mean, it sounds so elementary to say it, but a lot of people forget that at this time of year, I mean, look at the New England Patriots. The Patriots were kind of stumbling through the first couple of weeks of the season, the first half of the season, really. I mean, they lost to the Cardinals at one point, and then I think they went to overtime with the Jets, who are just terrible. And now you look at them in their last couple of games, and they're looking like the Patriots of old. Okay, they're blowing people out. Their defense looks good. Tom Brady's firing. You know, it's this time of year, and it's, I hate to use the old cliche, but it does separate the men from the boys. Okay, you have your Patriots teams that pull away, and they form, and they gel together, and they're like, okay, we're good, we're ready, let's go make our run for the playoffs. And then you have teams like the Buccaneers, who maybe aren't ready to do that. They're just still kind of getting their sea legs, and they maybe do something that they, it's a little too far ahead of them. The Falcons are with the Patriots in this respect, because they have a very powerful offense. They have a defense when they need it to, is able to win games, or if not win games, manage to not lose games, which is a key phrase I'm pointing directly at the secondary right now. But that's the Falcons. They're like the Patriots. Once they get hot, and around this time of year they get hot, it's very hard to stop them. And unfortunately, the Buccaneers get them twice on this side of getting hot. But it's going to be an interesting test to see how well this team matches up against a razor-sharp Falcons team. And I think this may be the only time we see a razor-sharp Falcons team. Because if the Falcons end up pulling away with things in the NFC, they're not going to be playing people that final week of the season when the Buccaneers and the Falcons meet in Atlanta. So, just the secondary, and I said it time and time again, and I got my hand in my head right now, because I just so sick of saying it. This team is not a playoff team because of the secondary. Put this secondary up against a playoff caliber offense, it gets torn to shreds. And then those shreds get torn to shreds. And the shreds of shreds get torn to shreds, and then burned, and then the ashes get torn to shreds. You know what? You see the cycle here? Atlanta right now, their previous playoff history aside, Atlanta right now is a playoff caliber offense that is dangerous. And this is the kind of offense that I'm talking about that the Buccaneers do not want to meet in the playoffs, because it's not going to end pretty. And I don't think Sunday is going to go pretty as well. I do not think today is going to go very pretty for the Buccaneers secondary. The rest of the team might be shored up, but the secondary is going to be what loses this game or starts the domino effect that loses this game. I mean, there's not really much more you can say about it. The secondary is just terrible. And I think this is the week that we are finally going to see the secondary lose a game. Hopefully not that the Buccaneers could have won. I mean, if they're going to lose a game, please, I hope that it's just out of hand the entire time and it's not a heartbreaking loss. Because if this secondary gives this fan base a heartbreaking loss, I mean, maybe that's what it needs. But everybody's aware that this secondary is terrible. And it's kind of like, you know, limping into battle at this point. You know it's not going to be good. And right now, we've been kind of able to weather the storm. And, you know, kind of not, the secondary has been bad, but, you know, we've been able to not lose games because of it. I mean, we're all together in waiting for the game that this secondary implodes. And I think that's today. I mean, it's a perfect storm for this secondary to implode upon itself. Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Roddy White, two of the most explosive receivers in the NFL going up against a secondary that has a banged-up Eric Wright and Leonard Johnson, E.J. Biggers. The word miracle is circulating inside of my mind right now, because that's what it's going to take for this secondary to not totally blow this game. It's going to be unfortunate. It's going to suck really bad, but it's inevitable. And it's, you know, it's, I've made peace with the fact it's going to happen. Maybe that's why I've been calling it to happen every week. I just want to get it over with. It's like tearing off a bandit. You know what's going to happen. It's just they've put it off and put it off and put it off. And, you know, just get it over with. Because it's either going to happen or it's not going to get better. Or it's only going to get marginally better. It needs to go badly so it gets better. The old thing from Fight Club, you can't, you know, completely rebuild yourself until you've lost everything. Okay, this secondary needs to get way down on itself before it can rise back up and grow and get the necessary pieces to move toward a future where we don't have this kind of anxiety about how a secondary is going to play against a top-tier defense. Just to put it into perspective for you, in case anybody's maybe still sipping on the secondary isn't that bad Kool-Aid. And by the way, that Kool-Aid went stale a long time ago. The Atlanta Falcons offense, they are ranked 4th in the NFL. They are averaging 292.9 yards per game through the air. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense is allowing the worst in the NFL. They are ranked 32nd against passing offenses in the NFL. They are averaging 312 yards allowed per game. Right there. Speaks for itself. When you have an offense that is averaging almost 300 yards a game and a defense that's giving up over 300 yards a game, what else do you need? It's not going to be pretty. It's going to take a miracle for the secondary to not lose this game. Unfortunately, that's the biggest key to this matchup. And it's one that the Buccaneers are vastly, vastly, vastly outmatched in. So that's that. That is the Pewter Playing pregame show. Again, if you can get the gist of the prediction where we're going to go with this, if the secondary somehow pulls a miracle again and is able to keep the Buccaneers in this game, they're going to win. But we're going to go with reality here. We're not going to pretend this isn't a world where a secondary is good. The secondary is bad. And the Buccaneers are going to lose because the secondary is bad. Something's going to happen where they have a lead and the secondary gives up a big drive to Matt Ryan and the offense, and all of a sudden the Bucs are down and their backs are against the wall. It's not going to be good. It's going to be the secondary's fault. I don't care how many interceptions Josh Freeman throws or how many times Doug Martin fumbles. I don't care who fumbles. The secondary is already, I'm already blaming the secondary for a loss that hasn't happened yet. There it is. Tampa Bay, if the secondary works, they'll win. If it doesn't, obviously, they're going to lose. The only question at that point is, how badly will they lose? Hopefully, it's not too devastating to watch. We will have updates throughout the game on thepewterplank.com and also on Twitter, at thepewterplank. We will also have recap up after the game, and the morning after Hill will be right here on thepewterplank.com Monday mornings for your morning coffee, your morning drive to work, your morning of sorrow, if you will, if the Buccaneers win, or your morning of rubbing it into your Falcons fans' friends' face if the Buccaneers win. That's what the Sunday / Monday morning looks for on thepewterplank.com. Most of you probably are going to go watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, stay tuned to the Pewter Plank all through the game for updates, analysis, highlights, and all that good stuff. And stick tuned on Twitter. This has been the Pewter Plank pregame show on the Pewter Plank Radio Network.